And what they're doing is creating connected communities. And inside there, the minute you drive up, they know who you are. When you walk in, you get packages delivered to package lockers. You will have robots soon taken up to your room. When you're in the house, you have an app, or in the building, you have an app to decide, do I want to go out and have Uber pick me up? Do I want to have a delivery? Do I allow deliveries? It's not done by anything manually now. It's all applications that are smart. When do I turn my thermostats on? When should the building security system come on? And it goes on and on.
We're going through something absolutely historic.
Technologies across the board are growing exponentially.
It's a disruption that's going to completely redefine the way businesses compete.
In the next decade, we're going to lose 40% of today's Fortune 500 companies.
The exponential growth of computing is continuing.
AI is nowhere near its full potential.
Whether you like it or not, that the future cannot be stopped by anyone.
Welcome to episode 123 of the Future Tech and Foresight podcast, hosted by me, Mark Verbenkov. So I think it's pretty safe to say that over the last several years, smart cities have begun to capture many people's imaginations of what the future of urban living will look like. And perhaps most recently, this was really pushed into the spotlight, or smart cities was really pushed into the spotlight by the project called The Line over in Saudi Arabia. Now, I've spoken about The Line and smart cities in general a few times on the podcast before, but today, in my discussion with Grant Verlaine, he's a veteran of the transportation industry, we really unravel how technology forms the bedrock of smart cities. So we explore how these digitally connected frameworks not only streamline urban services, but can markedly improve the quality of life for the residents that live there. So our conversation kind of ventures into the most promising trends in smart city technology, the indispensable technologies that, of course, fuel this urban transformation, and the challenges that loom on the horizon for citizens and smart cities in general. We also shed light on some of the more groundbreaking smart city initiatives that are paving the way for our possible urban future, and touch on some of the possible negative aspects of this really fascinating trend. So stay tuned as we delve into the intricate tapestry of smart city technology and its potential to redefine urban living. But who is my guest? So Grant Verlaine is a seasoned professional with over four decades of experience in the transportation, network security, and parking sectors, with a notable emphasis on smart city initiatives. He also has a rich history of tech ventures across Asia since 1989 and has been involved in over $500 million in technology investments. So he has been a trailblazer in developing innovative solutions for tracking and monitoring vehicle movement, and his enterprises have pioneered integrated control systems crucial for major airports, hospitals, and parking lot management. Among his accolades are the TIE 50 Top Technology Awards from Silicon Valley and the Ted Seberg Award. He currently is the CEO of Locomobi World, a smart city technology company specializing in parking, tolling, transit, storage, asset tracking, and threat management solutions. And he is the co-host of the SmartCity.blog podcast that looks at how buildings, cities, and communities are getting smarter, more efficient, and more connected. Great. Well, thank you very much, Grant, for coming onto the podcast today to talk about smart cities, which I think I've only talked about once on the podcast before. So I'm quite excited to hear your thoughts and insights on this.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a long passion of mine, so it'll be interesting to see what we talk about.
Great. Well, maybe we can start off with how you got interested in smart cities. I think it's been quite a hot term over the last several years anyway. But I think you've been involved in it for a little bit before then.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more of a, like we say, smart city is a term that we use kind of lightly. But I started back 30 years ago, trying to tell people that one day we're going to have a congestion problem. And I started the World Symposium, co-founded the World Symposium on Intelligent Transportation with three of us. I think there's about, 10,000 members now.
Okay.
At that time, it was like, guys, we're going to have a real problem. Like cities are going to have to get smart. We're not going to be able to get there, blah, blah, blah. And kind of no one really believed me. So I have kept my eye on it. for a long, long time, and then developed the first smart city portal for transportation on the cloud years ago, and have grown with it ever since and gotten very interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. Yeah, this is one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on as a guest, right? You've been involved in it for a long time. You've seen the evolution. You probably understand what the hurdles are coming forward. So yeah, I'm interested to dive in a little bit deeper. So as I mentioned, I've only talked about smart cities once on the podcast before. I'm sure most people that listen to the podcast are aware of what a smart city actually is. But for maybe the few listeners that aren't, can you just define what a smart city is for us?
Sure. It's a connected city. So essentially, it's taking basically everything in the city mm-hmm. and find a way to connect it so people can transact better, talk better, communicate better. No city's actually accomplished it yet. Mm. But the deal being that, you know, sooner or later, you and I and everyone will all be connected through all these smart devices, sensors, and it's really designed to make life easier.
Yeah. So is that maybe the one main benefit, right? To make life easier, a little bit more streamlined. You're talking about transportation, but I think it encompasses most aspects of life in a
city. Oh, yeah, yeah. The only reason I brought up transportation was you pull out the transportation part, there's no sense going to a smart city because you can't get there. Mm-hmm. Okay. But no, I mean, once you're there, there's every single type of service will be smart. The pandemic has actually, no doubt the pandemic has obviously accelerated the growth much quicker because we all stayed at home.
Yeah.
And we got into smart things and from smart homes all the way to smart mobility, to smart health. Now, of course, remember now, AI is here.
Yeah.
So that changes the whole smart world.
Can you maybe enlighten us to a little bit as to how that does it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at first, you know, we would have, I have smart devices, I have sensors that detect when I'm here, there, heat, electricity, you know, pain with my voice and my phone. And but now we have AI that's going to do all that for you. Mm-hmm. And so now what it's going to do is eliminate some of the sensor things we need because it's going to predict and do it itself. Now, are we going to trust it all? Well, that's the discussion we're going to have. But AI technology is going to take the development of smart city and 10 times it.
Hmm. Fascinating. And that's probably going to be experienced within the next couple of years, right? It's not going to be
yes.
a 10-year long time frame.
We have 10 years. Yeah, I'll tell you what I tell everyone that asks me that question. I have one anxiety. I go to bed at night wondering who's going to beat me tomorrow morning. Not 2 years.
Right.
There's too many smart people out there. There really are. You know, and my co-founder, Barney Powell, who founded Bing, he's one of the AI leaders in the world. Mm. And the things they're doing now to help us all. I mean, if you have a smart building, you're going to have smart health.
Right.
You're not going to go to the doctor. You're going to go into maybe a metaverse room, maybe unless it's serious. So it has a big effect on the smart city.
Yeah. Yeah. And so some of these things, I guess I've touched on in the podcast here and there, it's just not all come together as a smart city, as an umbrella term there. But I think one of the things that I get a lot of feedback on is, a lot of this is maybe wishful thinking or, you know, this is, again, 10 years into the future, 20 years into the future, if we're talking about fusion, for instance, right? But maybe you could touch on a couple tangible things that you've seen over your 30-year career focusing on smart cities. What are some, maybe it's smart mobility or just specific tangible examples?
Probably the easiest tangible one is smart buildings.
Yeah.
So, you know, for example, if I were giving an example in Toronto, because, and it's a good example because we're the fastest growing city in the world as far as cranes. We have over 230 cranes in the ground. I think the second most cranes is LA at 34.
Okay.
So we're really experiencing it. And what has happened here is we've gone on a smart building tangent. And I think that the reason I only call it smart building when it's really not, it's smart communities. So you have these communities like Brightwater that's developing on the water that's going to house 11,000 people. You have Aspen Ridge that's going to have, it's around 70 acres where the old IBM lands is. That's a development of a community. Then you have downtown, all the different buildings that are connected. And what they're doing is creating connected communities. And inside there, the minute you drive up, they know who you are. Mm. When you walk in, you get packages delivered to package lockers. You will have robots soon taken up to your room. When you're in the house, you have an app, or in the building, you have an app to decide, do I want to go out and have Uber pick me up? Do I want to have a delivery? Do I allow deliveries? It's not done by anything manually now. It's all applications that are smart. When do I turn my thermostats on? When should the building security system come on? And it goes on and on. Smart services on the second floor. Because of COVID now, most of these buildings have business centers, smart business centers where you don't have to go to work. I'm not suggesting you don't, but I'm saying that is the future. And in fact, let's take a step further. Work from home.
Yeah.
All these commercial buildings are clawing back 30, 40% because why? People with smart technology can work from home. They can access sites. They can do development. They can do drawings. All the things you had to be in the office to do is gone. So I would say connected buildings is the first stage. We can talk and say it was connected cars because of Uber and autonomous vehicles, but I really believe that's still in a more infant stage.
Yeah. Very interesting. So I'm out here on the West Coast. I've only visited Toronto a couple times. So I'm not familiar with these communities themselves, but like for these communities, for the buildings themselves, are these like previous non-smart or analog buildings that then had digital assets? Okay, so they're from the ground up. They're
brand new developments. So if you were to look these up, like the Brightwater is done by Dream, which is one of the biggest REITs in the country, and it is the biggest planned community anywhere outside of the line in Saudi Arabia. Okay, which our partner in who the company that is managing the line is Parsons, which is the smart infrastructure company in the world. They're our partner. I know them very well. And in Canada, you have people like Dream who are building full communities from the ground up. We're talking 10, 15 buildings, an arena, streets. Hmm. And by the way, that's not unusual. That's what's happening everywhere. There are a lot of these communities, and I get it. What they're trying to build is what we term the 15-minute city.
Yes.
Do I think it is? No, it's probably the 25-minute city. Okay. But the point is, the plan is that, and I think you're going to find the same thing in the downtown core of cities. It won't be one city. It'll be planned communities. Mm. And then you link them. You can't possibly link a whole city, but you can make a smart environment that allows communities to build.
Interesting. I have to bring up the 15-minute city or touch on that a little bit. I know I wrote it to you as one of the possible questions, but I have had I have had a lot of comments from listeners and just general people that have been concerned about this idea of the 15-minute city. I haven't taken the time to really dive into it very much. So, as you're an expert on this topic, what are your thoughts on this? Is there any legitimacy to the, I don't know if you want to call it conspiracy theory concerns or just general concerns of, well, 15-minute city, as I understand it, is, well, this is the 15 minutes that you'll essentially be allowed to live in, right? You're not going to be able to go outside of that because your smart, car might shut down.
Will die on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Look, anytime you build a technology and you want to be advanced, you're going to have the conspiracies and the theories, okay? Mm-hmm. And I get it, and I have to respect that. But no, the 15-minute city isn't designed to restrict your movements. It is designed to make your movements within the 15-minute range more convenient.
Mm.
Okay, the conspiracy is that, yeah, I got control over you and you can't leave. That's not going to happen. Well, if it is, then I'm on their side. I'm against that as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think so. I think that it's for, look, there's a lot of people who don't want to drive, who are handicapped, for a lot of social reasons. The 15-minute city makes total sense. Then there's a few who just want straight out convenience. Mm-hmm. Heck, I know people who directly, I've known them my whole life. They've never flown outside of the city. I have. I love traveling. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, there are a lot of people who are very thankful to be in their community. And when you make a stronger community, you can offer better things for the people in the community. So I don't know. I just don't know if it's a 15-minute city, because how you decide that's going to happen legally, yeah. I'd have a good one on that one. But as far as the build a parameter that makes you smart, that's the only way you can do it. Like, in other words, you're going to have, yes, communities linked to each other. But, you know, like downtown Toronto, they just tendered out another smart area. They're not doing the whole city because, quite frankly, the infrastructure's not there to build it. You know, people don't understand that to build a smart city, there's a lot of fiber and communications that just aren't there. Hence why you asked me something that was interesting. You said, are these legacy or new? They're new. Why? Because the legacy doesn't have the fiber. It's still copper-based. Now, are they going to be able to change that with new communication structures? Yes.
Okay.
No doubt about it. But they are going to have to take a second hat to the new developments.
Yeah, that was actually going to be another follow-up question that I had. So these legacy communities or parts of the city, do you have a sense about how long it takes to transform into a smart city? Like, is it 5 years? Is it 2 years? I guess
I don't think I can answer the time it takes. I can tell you that to take a legacy group of buildings and now get them into smart features, it's much quicker than 3 years ago, because you can put smart devices that turn legacy devices into smart now. So what I'm seeing now is, when I first started out, all these software companies, smart buildings, and there's big ones, from Smart One to Siemens to everyone, you know. And what I have found now is there's the new secondary market programs coming out that don't need the skeleton in the building to operate. And they're coming out now. Are they going to have less of effect? Yes, but they're essentially doing most of the same services by putting sensors in that are much cheaper than having to wire in new wiring throughout the skeleton of the building.
Right, so they're easier to install.
It can happen now. It's going to happen now. And here's what I've noticed. In my world, where my companies have been involved, we started with new construction. But those people who are building those buildings, they own other buildings. They go, we want that in this building, or we want this service here. So it's changing. And I think I'll lend that all to smart sensors.
Yeah.
Okay. Smart sensors are the future.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that was going to be my question. What's the main technology that's enabling this? So it is smart sensors.
It's edged, what we call, you would make call in your world, edged computing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And I find that if you don't have that, you know, anyone that builds a platform that is primarily for their own system are going to be out of business. It's got to be agnostic so that you can take these edge devices and help your customer mold them into what you're doing, whether it be a freeway, whether it be a freeway or a toll highway or a bridge or a building or a group of streets. For example, we're launching a system very soon that essentially you drive into the core of the city and you drive out. There are no meters, parking meters, nothing. Okay. Just sensors. So it's happening now, actually. And I think that, as I said, the number of sensor companies are, 25 times the amount than 2 or 3 years ago. And the interfaces are all there. And all these new software companies are coming out with building management systems and property management systems that will use the sensors. So I think we're kind of going to face it now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, as you're speaking, it really sounds like this Internet of Things world is just becoming, it's birthing, if you will, through the cities, right? So you have the sensor layer that's enabling all these things coming about. Are there any challenges for actually using these sensors? I'm sure there's tons of challenges when we can dive into those, but I'm speaking specifically about the sensors, right? To me, the way that you're describing it sounds like almost like plug and play, right? You add these sensors to the building and you can make the building, even if it's a legacy building, reasonably smart or as smart.
Sure. You can hook it up to your thermostat. You can hook it up to your entrance system. You can hook it up to your, but whether it's one or the other, probably your biggest thing is two things. You want to be careful that you don't have life dependency things on sensors that are not hardwired and do not have a skeleton. that have a lot of backup features. Okay, so if you build sensors into buildings or communities, even life-saving things in hospitals, because they're going very smart now. It better have a skeleton if you're worried about life safety. When you get beyond that, it's about security. Okay. So there are a lot of sensors out there. You know, the guy says, I just bought my sensor for $999. And I always say, good luck with that one. Okay. Yes, you can do many great things now, but what you have to be very worried about is the cybersecurity network that you're layering into the system. And if I would have to say that that might be the number one problem that we have to address is we're moving data. We're moving people's data as we collect these sensors and do things with them. Where's that data going? Can it be interrupted? Can it be corrupted? And the answer is yes. Of course it can. So that has to be a concern. And that's your biggest roadblock.
That's what I was assuming. I've interviewed a number of people that deal with like robotics, for instance, whether it's in a manufacturing facility or otherwise. And I mean, I think for robots, it's very visual in people's minds. Right. It's like, oh, if a robot gets hacked, well, they can actually cause some pretty severe damage. Right. I guess the same for like an automated vehicle.
I view a vehicle a robot. I feel, you know, we make a robot. So I introduced the first robot in the world in our industry called Mobi. And Mobi's put a few holes in the walls at the office learning. So, of course, but I can tell you something, just like a robot can fail. We already watch what humans do every day with guns and so on. So I got the sneaky feeling they'll be a little better. Mm-hmm. But again, you're right though. I mean, if you look at the concerns of a robot in the smart city, because they're going to be everywhere. Yeah, they could cause some mayhem if it's on the wrong network. And you know, the more autonomous you get, the more it learns on its own. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a fair concern, but of course I look at the good sides of robots helping operate on people that need help, that can't afford it, doing things quicker for people that need it, helping disabled. See, I take every single technology, only look at the good things and say, let's set up networks to fight the bad things.
Yeah.
Let's not stop progress because progress comes with pain. Okay. But you gotta guard against it.
Yeah. This is one of the things that that keeps coming up on the podcast actually, and maybe tying it back to the AI point that you were making, right? So I'm still not aware. I have a pretty like maybe vague or like I have a vision or an idea of how AI is going to be impacting many different industries. Of course, like anybody's like that's paying attention to technology. One of the things that I want to know more about is how AI is going to enable hackers or, you know, the malevolent actions within cybersecurity. I can only imagine that those fears would be compounded within a smart city infrastructure where everything's connected, everything's digitized, and I don't know if it's true, but maybe everything could be hacked, right? And if you layer on the ability of AI to, you know, give hackers, I guess, superpowers, or they're able to get into things easier than before, then maybe the threat level would be augmented as well.
I think that's the best question you'll probably ask me. But first of all, to make it clear, anyone can hack into a copper network in seconds. It's not secure at all, no matter what anyone tells you. Okay.
Good point.
So it's really easy now. That's why we live in the world of credit card fraud and so on. But AI can make it more difficult. But also AI could be the villain. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't see it yet being used in the form of quantum computing, which is supposed to be the future of AI, quantum physics, or blockchain.
Yeah.
Because the problem you have is, yes, if someone developed a quantum program that can drill around and learn as it goes, yeah, you're in big trouble. And so what I've seen companies been doing now, and they are, even the U.S. Defense Department in Canada, they're developing programs to fight cybersecurity in the event of data threats and advanced programs that try to learn. They have to be smarter than those programs. Mm-hmm. It's a battle of programs. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, there will always be the guys that can beat you. Just the way it is. And I don't believe that will ever change. I hope I'm wrong, actually. I mean, I don't want it to happen. But, I mean, there's some smart guys out there that just want to do bad.
Yeah.
And does that scare me? No, it doesn't. Because, you know, I work my whole time on finding ways to protect against it, rather than figuring a way to be dominant with it.
If
you do that, and if everybody does that, it makes it much easier. So if I'm not trying to dominate the world with my tech, instead of trying to defend how it can best be used, if we all took that attitude, it would work. But that's not the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. It's your number one problem. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
AI is going to change and improve our world. It's also going to be a nemesis.
Yeah. Well, just like any other technology, whether it's fire or, you know, the internet or social media or whatever. Yeah. There's always the two halves to this, to whatever technology we're looking at.
I don't see it changing.
Yeah.
Don't see it changing. Yeah.
No. Maybe the only thing that new technologies do, and they bring about like a new sense of awe, right? Because they're so much more powerful. They can interact with so many more people and bring about many more changes than previous.
But let's go with that, Mark. Yeah. So I remember, I hate to admit it, I remember when computers were introduced.
Mm.
I built my first computer when I graduated from computer science, and I built my own because they didn't make them. And then Windows came. I thought, oh my God, the world has changed. But then the big one, the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Internet, oh my God. Like, we have just taken on the whole world. Okay, and I think that at that time, we had every concern there was. And then we went from the internet to, you know, I guess the next big thing would have been cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, the cloud's going to destroy it. No one's going on the cloud. Now no one's not on the cloud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think each time, I think the negatives make the positives. You come out and say to me, I'm worried about this, I'm going to go and try to fix that.
Yeah.
And so you need to have the people do that. And it works. And, you know, but people talk out the side of their mouth. You have Elon Musk on one side saying, I'm sending a space rocket to space. I'm making my car smarter, but beware of AI.
Yeah.
And then what they do the next day? Oh, no. And robots are going to take over. Beware. And what they do the next day? Introduce his own robot, introduce his own AI company. So people make changes so quickly now because they realize you can be part of the solution rather than be part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you and I aren't stopping it.
No, absolutely.
Well, how do we fix it? How do we make it better? I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, no, maybe that's a really interesting way of thinking about things. I mean, I don't want to focus too much on the negatives of stuff. I'm generally, out of all of my friends in the group, I'm the techno positivist, right? But I need to give a little bit of balance in the podcast, right?
It's
too biased in one way.
Yep.
I wanted to go back a little bit. So you're saying that these smart sensors are the main dominant technology within smart sensors, of course. We've talked about AI, you know, some transportation technologies. Are there any other technologies that are maybe coming up in the next couple of years that you're particularly excited about that will change, revolutionize, or modify
smart
cities? Yeah.
There are so many things that people don't know about. And I try to stay on top. As I read about 100 articles a day. So I try to stay on top, and I'm fed them from, you know, computer science programs to regular media. But mainly use the sites that are informative. And, you know, you've got the whole idea of brain implants.
Yeah.
Where we're going, and that's a reality, by the way. It's not a joke, okay?
Yeah.
So people don't understand, though, when you start to do things like brain implants, that basically your brain is part of a circuit board. You take brain tissue and you attach it to like a circuit board. You implant it in the brain. It's very small. But all of a sudden, now you're communicating with your brain. And there are two things on that side. One is obviously, again, let's look at the positive side, where you have a person who can't walk, who can now walk because the brain impulses change to the body.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, we won't even bring up the fact that I can put things in the legs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the internal implants of making people's bodies move better and work better is a positive. Of course, the other side could be said, you won't need wearable devices because we're going wearable now.
Yeah.
Like the cell phone will die. Instead of a cell phone, it'll be a wearable. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whether it be a car or a headband or whatever. But then go beyond that where it's just going to be the brain. And it's going to say, and I get it. I totally get it. I look at you. You look at me. We can talk. I mean, it's the truth. It's brainwaves. And that's just all that is. And people don't understand. It's strictly an electrical energy force. And you're sending waves. And waves can be basically changed and understood.
Mm-hmm.
But you go further. You have brain implants. You have the ability now to what we're going to come out with is the ability to take things and cure them faster. We have self-curing steel technology that mends itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You talked about fusion. Okay. Well, fusion is the future, and fusion mm-hmm. is going to happen. The whole idea of the ability to go out and repair tissue in the body with an implant, those are really going to happen.
Mm.
And what does that do? Well, it disrupts the whole medical world. It disrupts, you know, and of course, what you haven't brought up, and I'm not trying to be negative, but it disrupts the whole workforce.
Yeah.
And we know that, but people have to understand that's gone on for 2000 years. God, when Henry Ford introduced the Model T, he didn't invent the car, but he invented a affordable way to move people around the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the things that are coming that are big will be obviously flying aircraft and mobile aircraft for smaller loads. I think that that's happening. I think that they have to get through the logistics of it. I think the fact that you're going to be able to, what people don't understand is we're already going to third worlds through energy. We're now computing into black holes. We're learning about time travel. I don't know. I mean, I was the guy who watched, you know, spaceships go to the moon in cartoons when I was a kid. I mean, I'm a firm believer that nothing is impossible anymore. And so I think will we have space transport via energy? I don't know. Are they working on it? Of course they are. Will we be on the moon living or another planet? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
so. I think that's already a given. And so the technology is already here to do it. But what happens when you have technology, but nothing around yet is ready? So in other words, I can have a sensor to cure cancer, mm-hmm. but there's no network to put that sensor on. It really doesn't matter. So I think the catching up of these sensors will come through the way we install new networks that communicate with each other. Doctors will be curing things in days instead of years. And I think that's phenomenal. Now, here's the best one. They are developing technology so you never die.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, and if you read it, the problem is it makes sense. Yeah, I say problem because for the naysayers, they think you're off your rocker.
Yep.
They think you're crazy. But then when you read it, you go, boy, does that make sense? So I think the whole future of the world is going to be based on how we develop this future technology. And I'm not suggesting climate change is the answer because I don't believe we had any humans when the Ice Age happened. And I guess we'd have to call that climate change. So I think that the world is here forever. Earth is here forever. Whether humans survive it, that's a different thing. So what are we doing? We're trying to find ways to either solve it because the Earth is going to grow 2 degrees a year no matter what we do.
Hmm.
You can go ahead and do all the things you want. So we have to develop technology to fight that. It's called stuff like air conditioning, better air conditioning, just the way it is. And it's called other planets. Like if they say we won't be able to live on Earth in 2000 years, well, we won't be then. I mean, we're smart people. And I think we won't be then. If they're going to develop a technology that you can live forever, interesting. Not sure I could do that. Like it comes a time when you want to like shoot yourself. No one do that, please. But you get my opinion, point. And people are investing that now. There are people right now invested in that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I believe it's there.
Yeah. As I've talked about on the podcast with other guests, like, we really are living through a time, I'm going to butcher the quote, but it's something along the lines of, you know, science fiction is now becoming science fact, right? We're living in a time
where, you're right.
Yeah, like whether it's this longevity movement or brain-computer interfaces, which I've talked about on the podcast a number of times. Like, when I was a little bit younger, I would think about these sort of things, watching TV or science fiction as well, and it sounded ridiculous. And now we're living in an age where, yeah, you have billionaires investing in longevity research to extend their lives another 20 or 30 years, hoping to get over this point of no return, where then, yeah, your life is extended and potentially forever. It's an absolutely fascinating time. It's I completely
and remember, this is all because of smart technology.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no way you and I can research that without being through a smart network. We collect data every day that gives us, like, the number one thing in the world today is analytics. Okay, so you have all these sensors, right? And they're in medical centers, they're in streets, they're in buildings, they're everywhere. And they're collecting data, billions of data per second.
Yeah.
Not per minute.
Yeah.
Maybe trillions.
Yeah.
And because of the art of smart computing and AI, they're able to take that data and understand it in seconds.
Yes.
Which allows you now to do the research to do all these things we're talking about in the future. Mm-hmm. So don't think it's not about the smart network and smart community. It's all about that. The data creates future. It allows us to predict things. And that's what we're doing. Where people are saying, I'm going to live forever, we're predicting that. Why? Because certain data shows that in research. And where are they getting that data? Every single day.
Right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a really interesting way of looking at, like, how these smart sensors, or just smart data, if whatever the term is actually the backbone or the foundation for a lot of these technologies to move forward, and the future to kind of, how should I say it, the future to emerge as
well.
As,
you know, data's always been there.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, it takes millions of years to collect it. Mm-hmm. Now it takes seconds.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I do want to go back to the brain computer interfaces that you were saying, whether it's invasive surgery to implant something, or these, like, non-invasive helmets and caps and things like that that are being developed right now. It was really interesting for you to connect that to smart cities. That's not something that's been talked about on the podcast before. And the thing that kind of sparked my mind was, well, we already interact with our city typically through, you know, something like this, through Google Maps, or Yelp, right, to find reviews of certain restaurants and things like that. But I think it's really interesting, as you're talking about this, you know, this IoT infrastructure developing across the city, and then through our, you know, brain chips or thinking cap, we're going to be able to interact with our city. Have you come across this idea of, like, we become the city, or the city becomes part of us? Like, the
well, now you're barrier? Talking about a digital city where you have a city, and it's called the metaverse, You know, it's funny, when the metaverse was really pushed hard by Mark Zuckerberg, people kind of laughed. Mm-hmm. And it went backwards. But now it's prime again. Web3 is big news, okay? Mm-hmm. And the metaverse, I developed my first four walls about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And we're using it. And it has allowed us to look at ways to simulate things, do things. Now, the metaverse would be a duplicate of the real world. Mm-hmm. So you may be down on a sidewalk and want to be on the eighth floor, but never actually go to the eighth floor.
Mm.
And I think right now you'd have to put on a set of big goggles, which gives you a sore neck. And obviously we know change.
Yeah.
But soon there won't be goggles. It'll be in your mind.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't it be? Why wouldn't you walk into a store and say, I want two pairs of pants size 34 with your mind? Why wouldn't you? It makes total sense. Is it scary? Of course it is. And you know, it's funny. I go back to a famous song that you will like, and you should look it up when we finish the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called, and it was written in the 60s.
Okay.
It was called In the Year 2525.
Cool.
And if you've never heard it, you have to listen to it, because it talks about, think of this, in the 60s, you won't need anyone to help you, because it'll be doing it for you. It'll move your legs. You won't have to have children, because it'll be in a test tube. When you listen to this song, and many of these guys were visionaries, it shows you that someone's thinking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And when you listen to that song, which I posted a few times and got thousands of responses, it's so amazing that this group writes a song about the future and everything in it happened. Like, what are they, Martians? Oh, I don't want to say that now, right? But you get my point, right?
Yeah.
And so the mind is very powerful, and you know that we don't use much of it.
Yeah.
And if we can tap into the mind with computer chips and sensors, which I think we will do, which we're already doing. That, and I have to watch that. Not to the way we can use it properly yet. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting that I could walk up to you and say, oh, my God, I owe him 3 phone calls. Oh, I promised to call Mark yesterday and I didn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, Mark, it's his birthday. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Think of it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
that's what we could be one day.
Yeah. It's absolutely fascinating. This is the type of stuff that keeps me up at night and that I think about. And I try to explain to as many people as part of the reason the podcast came about, right, to try and share these ideas a little bit further. One of the things that I think a lot of the feedback that I get from the audience is like the impact on people, right? Like, again, going back, like looking at the internet as it was coming about, I don't think anybody or many people, maybe a couple of songwriters back when it was coming out, would have been able to predict some of the impacts of, say, social media on the population. You know, there's been lots of studies about, social media bringing about a lot of harm to like teenagers. I don't think anybody would have thought about that when the internet was coming about. When we're talking about, say, smart cities, I think you've looked into some of the impacts, both positive and negative, of course. But what are maybe some of the key ones that come to your mind when we talk about smart city impact on people in a couple of years, like once these smart cities and the
communities are linked? Social media again.
Yeah.
Social media will drive what we do in the smart city. Mm. Social media has to be adapted. So everything you do has occurrence. Like, remember, we're taking private data.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it has a lot of effect on people. So when is it good and when isn't it? And I've tried to tell people there's 2 ways to take data. Like, I'll give you an example. In my world, I read license plates. And then I go, oh, my God, he knows where I live. Here's the fact is, I don't.
Mm.
Because we take the plate and we encrypt it into our own code so that's now just an ID. We don't know where you live. We don't care. It's just an ID number that we use so that we can better recognize you going in and out of a facility on a highway. Now let's look at the other side. If the police do the same thing, which could have our software, yes, they can look you up because through the Department of Transportation, they're allowed to. So think of the 2 social sides. You have one side that says, I'm not Big Daddy. And with the same software, we have Big Daddy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the communicating everything you do is probably the most important thing. It's the biggest impact now. I mean, I always tell people, they hear about cameras reading your face. Okay, so facial recognition everywhere.
Yeah.
And they get all upset. I go, but you do understand that you've been trading your information for 10 years on your phone. There's nothing nobody doesn't know about you. Understand mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Well, the impact is you'll have people who will protest it. You have people say, I won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do 2 things. You can take them out of the network, which I think hurts them, or you can be able to have the algorithms to separate people differently and what they want. That's the big challenge. So some people want that. I want, like me, I don't want you stealing anything from me. So I want as much recognition as possible that's me.
Mm-hmm.
Not you with my credit card, not someone else in my car. I want that. Where the other people don't want to be known about anything.
Yes.
Okay. And we can go into the ethics of that. Hey, I don't want him to know I'm at the Hotel Hilton twice a week. I get it. Okay. But you laugh, but that's a concern. So
sure,
you know.
Sure.
So the biggest impact will be now we're way smarter. I can not only tell you that, I can tell you your weight, height, and what you ate last week. Well, do I want all that? No. So there's going to be a real educational process. And it's funny, you brought that up, and I'm glad you did, because when we introduced all our software, I said, no one's going to understand this stuff. We need a social app. So we developed our own social app. Why? I really felt no one would get it and it's too difficult. So let's devise a way to talk to people socially and then build into that ways to make them understand better and reward them even, because it's going to be the biggest problem. So the idea of tracking vehicles, your phone, your face, what you eat, the algorithms are going to be challenged by government. They're going to be challenged by social networks. And I believe that, again, the social network controls the world. Do I agree at all? No, but it's here and we better adapt to it.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. I think there's always like counter trends or counter movements to whatever mainstream or large movement there is. And I think just like people have, you know, completely rejected social media, I'm sure some people will completely reject smart cities or AI or certainly brain computer interface technology. That is something that I see a lot of people rejecting. But just like social media or smartphones, right? It's the network effect. You get so many people using it and you're kind of forced to be using it and on it. Otherwise, you're missing out on all the advantages as well. So
absolutely. You have people that I meet even today, my age.
Yeah.
Okay. Who've not been on a computer.
Yeah. That is wild.
I sat, and I want to give you an example. Okay. I sat with a friend who's on the computer, but we're working on something with him. And he said to me, what do I do in the main lobby of, how do I monetize that? I said, watch. So I went to ChatGPT, told him what I had. And I said, give me a business plan.
Yeah.
And he saw it in 1 minute. He just about died. He goes, are you kidding me? See, they're missing things that are good for them.
Yeah.
Not just things that are, and he was amazed. He was like, I don't believe this. This is real? I go, it's been going on for a while. And so that's a good way to explain it, though. I think that you don't want to be left behind. You don't want to be left behind. And by the way, when you say there's people who are against social media and people are for, I support both.
Yeah.
I truly believe people have I get both sides. And if you don't respect that, you're not going to get very far.
Well, maybe that's, I'm also mindful of the time here, time's coming up, but I think that's also maybe one of the things to appease, whether it's the, you know, the conspiracy theorists or the people that are concerned about, you know, smart cities, that there might be like options to opt out, right? Like if I understand, and I don't understand it fully, but if I understand that some of the concerns is, well, smart cities are going to be everywhere and there's going to be no escape if I don't want to be part of that system. So maybe taking on what you're saying is like, okay, well, there's an option to opt out. You can exist in a non-smart or just an analog or a legacy community, whatever the term will eventually be, then people might not be so fearful of these.
I think there'll be levels of access. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you'll be able to opt out totally. Of course, you can opt out totally by not having a phone.
Yeah.
You can opt out on your own if you really want to. Okay. But it's difficult. And so I think that there has to be a level of opting out, like you say, and that's a good point. But I think it's going to be, you're never going to be totally out. There's just too much going on in the city now, monitoring, that you and I don't control.
Yeah.
You and I can't opt out the cameras downtown. We can, just don't go downtown, right? Or even better, wear a mask. See what I'm saying? Like, that's where you are if you want to opt out there. You're in. So if I'm in, I want the stuff that is better than that. If I'm going to be in, I want to know all about it. Because if I'm in, I want to know what the heck's going on, not the other side. So I guess you could take it glass half full, glass half empty.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, maybe the one last question. So you mentioned the line. I've talked about the line in Saudi Arabia once or twice before. Okay. Do you see that as, I mean, that's really from the ground up, a full-on smart city. Do you see that?
No cars. Actually,
no cars, right? Yeah, fully automated.
15-minute city.
Yeah, exactly. Is that going to be maybe not a blueprint, but an example of what people can expect in the next, say, 20 years across
many
cities?
That's taking everything in the world and throwing it into a basket. And that's smart. So I don't think that's a reality. Never mind the costs. Yeah. Okay. They're employing what, 600,000 workers a day. Yeah. Okay. The blockchain security alone that they're working on now is huge, because think of everything moving up and down that chain. The smart pass, it's a marvel. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm not sure it'll ever get finished. Okay, I don't want to know, and I'm behind it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that'll get finished. But I think what it does do, it rings up the notion that you can do. There's other smart communities like that they're developing. You know, water communities. There's more than one of those being built in the Middle East. But that's the one we all talk about. I mean, and the line, I think, is something you should read about, only because it gives you all the different things that could happen in a smart city. But I don't think it's a reality thing you're going to see come to our local city tomorrow. Okay. But a lot of it could. A lot of it will. Remember, they're going to prove out new technology there.
Right.
Okay. And so we'll get to see 6G or more. We're going to see how you're going to handle blockchain in a wide area market. We're going to see if the 15-minute city even works. And so I think that it's like anywhere, the first, it's, you know, very rare to have the first be the biggest.
Yeah.
Right. Usually the first is a beta,
right.
But that's not how they operate. So we're going to see the marvel of everything thrown into a blender and see what happens. And I think we should all follow it, because it is truly an amazing technological city.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be interesting to follow that. I'm sure I'll have that covered again, or once or twice on the podcast as time goes on. And I guess, you know, the time's pretty much up here, Grant, and I want to be respectful of your time. Thanks again for your kind of like vision and discussing a little bit of smart cities, but also like what the potential future of these smart cities, and I guess to a certain extent, society will look like. I know that you have a podcast, you have a business. Where can people reach out and follow what you're doing?
The smartcity.blog is my podcast. I can be found, you can search me and find anything you want on me, but grant@locomobiworld.com, locomobiworld.com is my main investment. But like I said, just search me.
Right
on. I kind of got enough people and follow me, and I'm more than happy to talk to anybody about the future.
Well, thanks for listening to this week's Future Tech and Foresight podcast. If you like what you've heard here, there are, of course, a number of ways that you can support the podcast. The best way would be to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or give a rating on Spotify, which you can find a step-by-step explanation for on the futuretechandforesight.com website. Alternatively, feel free to leave a comment either on the episode show notes or the YouTube channel, where you can see video recordings of the interviews. And finally, if you are part of an organization that is aware of the disruptive and transformational impact that emerging and future technologies will bring and want to know more, please get in touch to hear about the strategic foresight services that we offer and how we can help future-proof your organization and take advantage of the phenomenal opportunities available to survive and thrive in the future.
A lot of future-shocked people and future-shocked institutions in our society are simply overwhelmed.
Once there is superintelligence, the fate of humanity may depend on what the superintelligence does.
Science fact is catching up to science fiction.
The first truly intelligent machine will be the last invention that humanity needs to make.
The only scarcity that will exist in the future is that which we decide to create ourselves as humans.
Within a 10-year design revolution, we can have all humanity living the highest standard living anybody's ever known.
Progress is accelerating at an exponential pace, and it's going to reach a point where progress is so fast, it's going to be a singularity.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens.
Every single headline points to the birth pangs of a Type 1 civilization.